for May 22nd, 2009. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
It's episode 73 of the Lullabot Drupal Podcast. We get together, well, I used to say every few weeks, and talk about Drupal. But we started another podcast. Well, Kent, we went to DrupalCon, and Kent recorded all these interviews, and we have a whole other podcast that's been happening, and I got distracted with some other things, and it's been like 2 months since we've done a podcast, and we're here. We're doing a podcast. We're going to get back up on the horse and charge, and I don't even know what we're going to talk about today, but we're here, so that's good.
Woohoo!
Woo! I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with...
Angie Byron.
And...
Jeff Eaton.
As well as...
James Walker.
And last, but certainly not least...
Kent Bye.
There you go. So, Kent, have you been listening to the Drupal Voices podcast?
I have, yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, depending on how people are subscribed to this podcast, I don't know if they would get Drupal Voices automatically.
No, they don't. If you just subscribe to this podcast, you have to sort of subscribe to the new all audio feed or go specifically to the Drupal Voices feed. So yeah, we've done 36 episodes now. So
yeah,
4 a week.
So if you go to lullabot.com/podcast, they're all kind of listed up the top there, and you can click the iTunes link to subscribe in iTunes if you want to catch up with those and subscribe, or just go back and listen to them. They're bite size compared to the usual monolithic ridiculousness of this podcast. I've been listening to them. They're great. Super, like, I don't know. It's a whole kind of a different thing, but I really like them.
If you don't commute or have a regular podcast listening to plan, it's really easy to get way behind when they come out daily.
And at that point, it's like catching up on Battlestar Galactica.
Just listen. Yeah, I mean, I sort of had intended for them to be sort of very short for people that have 10-minute commutes that they could listen to it both on the way there and the way back. I know when I drive around, I'm not usually in the car for more than 10-15 minutes. So that was sort of the target range that I was going for. And at DrupalCon, it sort of started as going around and asking people for module recommendations, but it kind of expanded from there. Just sort of ended up doing about 50 interviews and just talking about whatever people were working on, from the semantic web to agile development to object-oriented programming to, you know, the crazy stuff that OpenBand is doing with their 200 modules in Drupal.
Wow. And those go up pretty much daily. They go up Monday through Thursday, and then this one goes up every other Friday when we get them together. and we've got a whole bunch of them queued up, and they'll just keep coming out, and then we'll go to DrupalCon Paris, and Kent will spend another DrupalCon without doing anything other than interviewing people. Actually, Addie is off. She got at DrupalCon. I don't know if we mentioned this, but at DrupalCon, the Knight Foundation announced their grant. And Addie Berry from Lullabot, who's not on this podcast but on most of the other ones, got a grant for Drupal documentation. She's sort of traveling the world, going out and talking to people about documentation, Drupal documentation, and going to a lot of Drupal camps and organizing doc sprints and stuff like that. And she's also got a little recorder and is going out and maybe doing some interviews like that herself. So we got this Lullabot street team out there coming to your town. Tracking you down.
Putting stickers all over you.
Putting stickers all over you. It's a... Gosh, so much has gone on since we did our last podcast. We We went to South by Southwest. We had a through a party at South by Southwest with Get Satisfaction and Laughing Squid and
Automatic,
a whole bunch of people, and mostly we just stuck stickers all over people. Which is,
if anybody's curious about that, I believe actually quite a few DrupalCon photos actually went up too with people with various like temporary Lullabot tattoos and such. If there are rumors that such photographs exist,
yes, the Lullabot tattoos were particularly popular at the party we threw at DrupalCon, and yes, there are certainly some. I took a lot of pictures and they're in my photo stream on Flickr. My username there is JJeff, and I don't remember how you get the URL for that, but it's something like flickr.com/photos/JJEFF, something like that.
Yeah, and actually some of those pictures ended up in our DVD for theming.
We've got a theming video that's coming out. So we'll just sort of knock off the news items, you know, conversationally. So that reminds me, Kent, we've got a theming video that's coming out. Should be out Monday, probably, for download. Theming basics for Drupal. Our CCK and views downloads are now, we now have videos, DVDs for those as well. How we work it is we do sort of a high definition video, QuickTime kind of thing. And then we start selling that for download while we, meanwhile, create menus and box artwork and liner notes and all that kind of stuff and send that off to the pressing plant. And then it usually takes about 3 or 4 weeks and we get DVDs back and they go into our warehouse. And so they're in stock at our store and can be shipped out. And we have the DVDs for CCK and Views, which is always, I don't know, somehow, at least for us, particularly rewarding to have something to hold in our hands. But the downloads sell really well as well, particularly internationally, where people don't have to ship things to Australia and stuff like that. So, but yes, CCK and Views DVDs in stock. The theming, Drupal theming basics, next week, soon.
And despite rumors, we have not yet actually managed to solidify the contract to have Edward James Olmos do the commentary for the Criterion edition.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the you switch the audio, and then it's just us doing an impression of Edward James Olmos talking about.
But you know, we're working on it.
Yeah.
Actually, if you wanted the commentary, you could have watched the full Ustream feed.
Well, yes, we did Ustream, much as we're doing for this podcast right now. It got us sort of thinking about, hey, we should do this for our podcast, too. Yes, and so when we all converge here at the Lullabot studio and record the videos, they take us about, I don't know, the actual recording of the videos takes about 4 days, although there's a lot of planning and setup, and then Kent goes and does crazy editing.
It's been sort of an interesting process just to do the videos, just because it ends up about like a 1 day of a Lullabot workshop turns into 2 days of shooting and about anywhere from 2 to 3 hours on the DVD. The workshop's a lot more spread out and there's a lot more questions, but it's sort of been interesting to try to translate those. The CCK and Views I knew something about, but the theming I really didn't know a lot about, so it was really interesting to try to learn about it and direct it and focus it and then sort of at the end come together with a DVD that sort of explains it from soup to nuts, so I'm pretty excited about them.
The theming one's particularly interesting because we built a theme. We have a theme that we're going to be putting out, that'll probably – I might actually get a chance to put that up today or tomorrow. And so there's a theme that will be out there. But also So I've got this thing that I say a lot about, and the phrase is, content defines design, meaning that the content of your site really defines and sort of fills out the design of your site. And putting it just out a theme, it doesn't really do it justice. It doesn't really show people what it does, how it works, or how it can work. So we're actually putting out a full Drupal distribution of sorts. It's not really a supported distribution, but it's a whole packaged Drupal with an install profile that installs the database. That's all full of dummy content and stuff like that. So it's really super for people who kind of want to see the theme in action, but particularly people who are watching the video to sort of play along at home and be able to sort of look through and see how things like the views were created for our photo galleries and how node queues work and things like that. So, yeah, that's all coming soon.
Yeah, Angie actually wrote a whole article about what she did to create that distribution. Did you want to talk a little bit about what you did there, Angie? That's pretty neat what you're able to do.
Yeah, so we've had the concept of installation profiles since like Drupal 5, and the idea is that, you know, Drupal itself doesn't do much at all because it's, you know, kind of a framework with a CMS built on top of it sort of thing. If you want to do anything really cool with Drupal, you spend a lot of time in configuration and enabling modules and getting those modules to work together and all that kind of stuff. So one of the things that's really annoying, though, is trying to write these installation profiles, because usually you need to write like a bazillion, you know, function calls every time you want to set a variable or every time you want to do this, that, or the other thing. You know, Jeff and I were talking about how to make a distribution for the files that need to come with a theming DVD. And you know, I was like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of a pain in the butt and you have to do all this stuff. And then we were thinking, we're like, well, actually, all you really need to do is you just need to import the database dump. And that's kind of, you know, a lot to ask a user to do. It's like, oh, just go into PHP MyAdmin and, you know, do the import stuff. And we were like, well, what if we just wrapped an installation profile around a database dump, because then making a distribution would basically be like a 10-second operation. You just make a database dump, stick it into a folder, and then when they install Drupal, they just get a selection for it like anything else. We looked at demo module and demo installation profile, which was pretty cool, and I was able to rip some code off from them, but that's more of like a robust solution when you want like several different versions of your demo site and you want to be able to flip back and forth between them and that kind of stuff. And all we really want to do is just quick and dirty, take this dump, stick it in the database, and then install Drupal. So that's what it does. So if you've ever wanted to learn how to do that, that's you can read that article and it'll tell you how.
Article coming up soon. Yes. We'll have to get all these things. We're talking about a lot of things that aren't up at the time we're recording this, so we'll have to sort of line those up so they come out soon. Goodness. What other news? Some other Lullabot news. Well, first of all, we've got workshops coming up in Providence, Rhode Island, in June. June 8th and 9th, Drupal module development. And June 10th, 11th, and 12th, Drupal theming and jQuery are all happening in Providence. You can sign up for the whole week and get a discount. Lullabot.com/training. There you go. There's our little sponsor bit. Buy our stuff. we added Get Satisfaction to the Lullabot store. Lane Becker from Get Satisfaction came and spoke at the Do It With Drupal conference in New Orleans that we ran in December. And I've been friends with Lane for a long time. And we were kind of looking for a way to make sure that we were getting all the feedback that people had and that we had a good sort of venue for people to I don't know, talk about problems they were having or concerns they had about our store stuff. And Get Satisfaction was just super easy to slap in there. We're actually using, we're not using Drupal for this store yet. we're using Shopify. It was really also quick and easy to get set up. There's really something to be said about things being quick and easy. I think Drupal could take a dose of that.
All you have to do is, you know, make an installation profile out of a database bucket and you're done.
Well, yeah. But we're actually in the process of rebuilding the store in Ubercart to give us a little more control over discounts and coupons and things like that. But I don't know. Get Satisfaction is pretty cool. And if people do have questions, yes, just go to the store and click the little feedback tab. It's for questions about the store. We can't really do Drupal support in there, but yeah. What else?
Well, since Nate's not here, I'll take the api.lullabot.com. So we set up api.lullabot.com, as most people know, and we refer to all the time in workshops and training and stuff. api.drupal.org is sort of, you know, the ultimate developer's resource. It gives you full documentation on all the functions and all of the sort of main features and subsystems and APIs and stuff in Drupal core. So one of the things that we did recently is set up our own api.lullabot.com site, and which operates, you know, almost identically to api.drupal.org, except we've put in a bunch of contrib modules as well. And for those who don't know, both api.lullabot.com and api.drupal.org run the API module. And one of my favorite tips and tricks is having people, you know, set up their own API sites for their for their projects or for themselves, because the way that the API module works is it just scans, you know, a directory full of Drupal code that you pointed at, and builds a documentation site from the source itself. So that's very cool. And I think Nate cleaned up a couple of things, in building api.lullabot.com. Cleaning up some of the autocomplete and auto-searching functions, and it automatically searches on a, you know, if you go to a page that doesn't exist and get a 404, it'll automatically search and try to figure out what you were looking for and things like that. So api.lullabot.com, pretty cool.
Yeah, it works like php.net. If you go to, you know, php.net/, and you're trying to figure out array search or something like that, you know, you can go to php.net/search or php.net/array, and it'll bring you to the, depending on whether you've hit upon an actual sort of function name or similar kinds of entity, it'll either bring you directly to that page or it will do a search. And this works that way too. So you go to api.lullabot.com/Drupal. And it'll show you all the functions with Drupal in their name and stuff like that. So,
or api.lullabot.com/L.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. So that's a sort of cool thing. We were at a workshop in Portland and just sort of like saying, why don't we do that? And we did that. And it's got, yeah, a whole bunch of modules. If you go to the About page, it lists all of the additional modules that we've got installed. Like I said, we're doing this work on building the Drupal store or the Lullabot store with Ubercart, and we needed to create some little glue kinds of modules. And so we put Ubercart in the repository, and we're able to look through the APIs for Ubercart and kind of see how everything works and find the hooks that we need and stuff like that. So if you're a Cody person, like we know that you are, some of you are, it's a handy, both handy and dandy.
We like to call that hen dandy.
Hen dandy. Well, let's see. What else? Other news. External news from the outside world. Enough about Lullabot. Let's talk about Drupal.
Obama's president in the U.S.
What?
How long has it been since we did a podcast?
Not that kind of outside news.
Oh, no. Drupal keeps winning awards. Can't stop them.
Yeah, it's we are part of the Webware 100, which
what does that mean?
Is always awesome. There was just another award that was there was an award for different awesome websites. Does anybody have that article that came up? What was that? Anyone? Bueller.
Sorry?
Horizon Interactive Awards. That's what it was.
Oh, that's on the front page right now.
Yeah.
Front page of Drupal.org, you say.
Correct. Yep. It's node 468226.
Of course, yes.
Of course it is. It's good old 4680, we call it. it's awesome because like none of those sites look like Drupal sites at all.
Five of them were designed by our friends at Palantir.
Well, that's true.
And two by PingVision, and another Drupal shop.
PingVision is by Studio Module, or perhaps Studio Colon Module, or perhaps Studio Module. I don't actually know how to pronounce that.
But the pause is implied.
There's just awards all over the front page of Drupal.org. And yet,
so in summary, Drupal is awesome.
And I'll just sort of segue into another thing. I'm looking at Drupal.org. It still looks like the old Drupal.org. I thought we had a new design.
We do.
Where is that?
Where is that? Ask me that in 5 minutes.
I mean, well, you're going to look for the site where people could go to see the new design being built. But I mean, sort of conceptually, like, what is the it's a new theme technically, but there's a whole bunch of new functionality that's starting to make its way onto Drupal.org. What's sort of the status update with all of that?
There's going to be at least one and possibly two more sort of in-person sprints. So the sprints so far, they had one in I think it was Cambridge, but somewhere in Massachusetts near Boston, where they basically got everyone together and did the big, huge work to upgrade Drupal.org to Drupal 6, because that was sort of a prerequisite to doing any of the kind of stuff that's in the mock-ups. And then after that, they did a second run, and then they worked on the theme aspect of it. So they basically have the theme, they have the site upgraded to Drupal 6, and they have a lot of the underlying functionality that's in development right now. For example, there's this dashboard component where you can kind of make your own homepage sort of thing, where you say, I want to look at commit messages, I want to look at, what are the most recent issues in the Drupal core queue, and I want to look at this, and you can drag and drop these blocks all over the place, and it's really, really nice. By the way, Addy just saved the day on IRC. She said that this site, so you can see that the current the current process of it is at staging.dosprint.org, which which is not coming up for me right now, but hopefully it will be working by the time the podcast published.
It is, after all, just the staging site.
It is.
That's not public. Don't.
Yeah, but it's quite it's public. They got a HT access protection, but I think the password's demo and demo. It's got it right on the thing, just so we don't get dual indexed by Google.
All right, got it.
All right. So it's coming along really well. I think they want to get a bit more in place before they move it over to the live site. The actual mocks were way more than just a reskinning of Drupal. Like, it really rethought out a lot of stuff. Like, how to, for one thing, like, this was a kind of contentious change, but, like, the download link is not one of the top level navigation items at all anymore. Because the idea is that you really need to understand what you're getting into before you download Drupal. You need to understand that this is a community-driven project, that it can do anything. It's not just a blog. It's not just a, you know, like a little brochureware website. It's all these things. So there's a lot more emphasis on kind of getting people oriented to Drupal before they sort of dive into the deep end of the pool. Which I think is going to be good, and it's also way prettier than it used to be, which is also very nice. And there's just a lot of neat little features to basically make Drupal personalized and or Drupal.org personalized, so that we can meet our like 11 billion target audiences, and also just kind of raise the profile of the individuals in the community who are contributing, and make Drupal into what it is. So I'm pretty excited about it, but it's probably going to be a couple more months before we see that, I'm guessing.
Some people in the Ustream chat room are asking, what was that URL again? It was staging.dosprint.org. Dosprint meaning Drupal.org. For those people who get impatient saying Drupal.org, they oftentimes say D.O. And then I say, what? Oh, yeah. yeah. What else? You know, we saw a really interesting product I wanted to mention on the podcast. I'd seen ads for this around, and I have to admit that I sort of thought, oh, this is ridiculous, sort of a toy. But at the Portland, we usually do a meetup when we do workshops, and at the Portland workshop a few weeks ago, during the meetup, David Lee got up and demonstrated this program called Artisteer, which you can find at artisteer.com. It's a Windows-only program, but it's a theme-building program, like a theme generator that works with WordPress, Joomla, and lo and behold, Drupal. And I have to say, we were launching into the theming workshop, and, you know, you think like, oh, this is, you know, particularly theming in Drupal kind of is seen as a dark art. And I certainly don't want to put any Drupal themers out of work, but I don't know if this is going to put any Drupal themers out of work, but it's pretty good. James and Kent, you were there.
I think it's really nice for people who just want something quick and, you know, I mean, they want something that's not Garland, something that's a little bit, you know, that has a bit of a sort of personalized feel, but it's not, I agree. It's not going to put themers out of work. I mean, you know, your typical sort of themer's job where they're implementing sort of very specific design and, you know, trying to meet, you know, certain requirements and using sort of creativity or whatever else. You know, I mean, it's not going to compete with that. But in the space of people who just, you know, I mean, particularly, you know, individuals or smaller groups or things like that, that just want something that's fairly appealing, that's not, you know, Garland or something that's going to look like hundreds of other Drupal sites out there. It was really impressive. And I mean, I remember that night thinking, you know, he'd sort of shown off the interface, and it's very sort of simple and easy to use, and you've got a ton of controls and things you can tweak about the design that it generates. And then we were sort of like, oh yeah, well, let's see the theme code that it puts out. And the theme code's actually remarkably decent. So again, for those people who are looking just for a you know, like a quick jump start, and are running Windows. It's a pretty neat little tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the other thing I was going to mention. It is only for Windows at this point. I don't know if they have any plans for Mac. But yeah, it was sort of funny because I had just finished doing all the theming video editing. And in the workshop after the meetup was happening, they had just sort of finished the theming stuff, and people were like, oh, well, we should just use this. But I think there's like, you know, there's like the basic theming and an advanced theming, and it looked like it probably covered a fair portion of the basics theming, but nowhere got close to some of the advanced theming stuff that you can do with having dynamic stuff be swapped in and out of your theme. So But yeah, it looked pretty decent for at least getting a start on generating all the files and everything that you needed, starting with a pretty graphical user interface.
And it's a commercial product. It's $129 US, it's interesting. I can't tell if there's like a demo. There's a demo video, or if you can download it.
There's a demo version of the product, but if I remember correctly, it watermarks or like stamps all the images that get output.
Right, but it still allow people to kind of test it out.
Yep,
that's cool.
XML sitemap modules getting some love.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Oh boy. So that was like 3 weeks of my life. So XML sitemap is a specification agreed upon by like Google and Yahoo and MSN Search and all these other things to basically be like a way to describe to search engines what's on your site. So a client of ours needed that functionality on their website, and you know, we were like, okay, that should be about 5 seconds of work because there's an XML sitemap module, and you just turn it on and go, right? Wrong! Because what happens is that module, oh my god, was probably written for, you know, it was probably written by somebody who had like, you know, a website with 100 pieces of content and, you know, maybe 50 comments or something like that. Because on our client site, we have more like 110,000 nodes and I don't know how many comments, a bazillion or so. And when you install it on that kind of an environment, it exploded in a huge, hairy way. So we've, kind of did the big, you know, quintessential questions like, okay, well, do we fork the module like everybody else has done and just write something one off for this client, or do we, you know, try and work with the maintainer to fix the performance issues, or what do we do? So, I tried for a couple weeks to kind of feed performance patches in, and you know, just kind of advising the maintainer, who's a really active, awesome guy. His name's Kiem, you know, so just trying to, you know, say, hey, here's a database with 50,000 nodes in it. Try it out and see how it makes your site melt. And, you know, stuff like that. And in the meantime, a guy named Dave Reed has kind of went the forking way, but not quite as bad as like, you know, making a new module, because what he did is he threw his code in his sandbox and he saw the stuff I was going through, and we kind of had big long discussions about architecture and things like that. And so what happened is through all these discussions and stuff like that, we got the main maintainer of the XML sitemap module involved, Darren O. And what's happened is, as a result of sort of all this brainstorming and stuff, XML sitemap module A has a beta release for Drupal 6, which it didn't have before, like, say, a month ago. B, it's got three maintainers now that are active instead of just, you know, the one poor guy trying to, you know, shepherd this module into the future with this throng of angry users just mad about the fact that it's not there yet for Drupal 6. And C, there's a 2.x branch that's a rewrite that's written for high-performance sites. So when that 2.x version comes out, that's basically going to be the module that you can just drop in on a site with, you know, 100,000 nodes or whatever. So it's pretty impressive. If anybody out there needs this module and wants to contribute something to it, if you go to davereid.net, he's got a little chip-in thing on the side there. He's just asking for like $500. So like, if you have $500, please, or if you have $20, just give it to him so he can get that thing done. And then, you know, we can all have a lovely XML sitemap module, and, you know, that kind of thing. But it was really interesting because it showed how, you know, if you sort of take the more long-term approach and working with the developers and stuff like that, you can end up with really a much holistic solution. So we've got peer review going on in that issue queue. The three maintainers collaborate together and they make sure that nothing goes in without at least somebody else looking at it. So the module is breaking a lot less often. And it's also really rapidly developing because, you know, it gives people an incentive to contribute because they can, they see activity going on and they see people responding and stuff like that. So I think that when all said and done, it's really going to be an awesome thing for the project. And it's such a really obvious need for people who want, you know, it's like a no-brainer SEO kind of thing. Just plop that in and then bingo, you know, search engines know how your site's set up. So anyway, that was a lot of work. And, you know, the people maintaining that module are doing even more work now. But I think that when it's all said and done, it's going to be pretty, pretty cool.
So what's the moral of the story?
The moral of the story is don't fork. Because no, really. Because, like, literally, I posted
something on Twitter. And what do you mean by that? Because this is a contrib module. So what do you mean by forking? I mean,
so it's a contrib module. So okay. So when I first encountered this issue, I basically posted something to the effect on Twitter, like, I hate you and I hope you die twice, you know, or something like that, to XML sitemap module, because I was just so annoyed with the whole situation. And then like 11 or 12 people commented back and said, yeah, I totally had to just rewrite that module one off for my client. So that's like 12 people that just happened to be following me on Twitter that knew enough to rewrite the module from scratch, but didn't bother fixing the module so that it works for the, you know, 10,000 other people that are using it. So the approach that was taken here was like, okay, we could do the same thing as those 12 other people did, and we'll fork it and we'll get it to work for this one client. And then we're going to have to, you know, maintain it ourselves and, you know, make sure that, you know, we fix the bugs in it, because no one else is going to ever see this code and that kind of thing. Another approach could be to make a better sitemap module in contrib. So that's another way of forking is, you know, it's better than doing the custom fork because at least it's out in the community, but it creates a lot of confusion for people because it's like, do I use XML sitemap, which is linked from Google's documentation and then is linked in all these tutorials and stuff, or do I use this better sitemap module, and which one is okay and which one isn't? And then you get in the situation where both modules exist, they're both buggy in their own ways, you kind of have to figure out which one is the least buggy for you in your particular use case, and it just creates a nasty situation. So this approach that was taken gets everybody who cares about this issue working on one project and makes sure that all the people who've tried this and have hit their heads against the wall, put their heads together and say, okay, you don't want to do it this way, you should do it that way instead, and this kind of thing. And I think that the results are going to hopefully be really great. And what's going to happen is you're going to have one very strong sitemap project that everybody can use rather than a bunch of competing solutions, or worse, solutions that all these individual developers are maintaining themselves for their clients.
Right. It's a popular module.
Very popular. It's like the 10th most used or something like that.
In building api.lullabot.com, Nate and I were sort of looking at the top modules, and you can actually find these on Drupal.org. It's sort of a page that's kind of hidden away, or maybe it's not as hidden away these days, but Drupal.org/project/usage, and there's a list of all of the modules, each updated each week, Well, it says how these are generated. It's the modules that are sort of phoning home, or the sites that are phoning home and reporting which modules they have through the update status stuff. But Drupal, of course, number one. Views is two. CCK, and then Jeff Eaton's token module. Everyone.
Well, I will say that I don't actually take care of token module. Greg Madison has done amazing work, you know, at maintaining that, and we touch base and, you know, coordinate a lot when there are, you know, bugs that need to be ironed out or, you know, stuff like that. But I wanted to give a huge shout out to Greg because he has done an awesome job. He's Greggles on Drupal.org. So
I remember when everyone thought you were crazy for writing that. Good times.
Actually, on another note, Greggles just came out with a book called Cracking Drupal, which is about Drupal security issues and how to avoid them. Not really security issues, but just like common silly things that you can do to make your site insecure. You know, I read the first chapter of it, and it actually looks really good.
Amazon's supposed to be bringing my copy any day now. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, nice. We talk about that in our workshops usually, sort of being aware of security concerns. And it looks like this book gets really in depth with that, because
Yeah.
Drupal is mostly just sort of a toolkit, and you can kind of put together the tools any way you want, and you can certainly.
Yep. Yeah. I've noticed, I mean, yeah, when we do, you know, in training and workshops and stuff, talk about security, you know, we usually do so from a module developer's point of view, and you know, I mean, looking at the sort of the API level things that you need to do to keep your site secure, but you know, sort of being part of the security team and just, you know, a lot of the, you know, seeing a lot of the security issues that get pointed out, they're just so, you know, it's just so much more common to have configuration errors be the cause of your security issues. Like, you know, I mean, people are less so these days leaving, you know, stuff like PHP filter on, because we've made that harder and harder to do with each release. But things like, you know, leaving, you know, using input formats incorrectly and leaving, you know, like full HTML on for anonymous commenters and stuff like that. Yeah, so I mean, I think there's, I don't know. I'm excited to get the book. I've done, you know, I mean, obviously we've done Greg for a long time. I did a, you know, co-presented a security talk back at DrupalCon Boston with him, and you know, he understands the topic and the material, and yeah, I'm looking forward to the book.
Yeah, have you guys heard this remix of the? Of the Drupal song, I tweeted it the other day.
I have not heard it.
Oh, really? This is always the remix that I thought someone would do. Is this sort of like a rockin' remix? So, the Drupal song. God, when was that? Just search Google. Just type Drupal song into your browser bar, and it'll come up.
But don't go to that freaky YouTube.
No,
video.
Not the. Well, that's
it.
Yeah.
It will just.
And so there's the. When was it? It was March 19th, 2007, almost exactly 2 years ago. Something came over me. And recorded a jingle for Drupal. And like I said, Google it and you'll find it. And then I put out remix tracks for it and basically open sourced the song. And there were a whole bunch of sort of disco remixes. But somebody, this guy, it looks like his name is Mark Sonnebaum. And I Googled Mark Sonnebaum Drupal song and couldn't find anything. But what I did find was on blip.fm. All right, here's the URL. Ready? blip.fm/profile/sprout builder/blip/ here we go, 4468711. Ah, the great thing about this podcast is reading off URLs.
Can you repeat that? I think I missed.
Yeah. It'll be in the podcast notes. And here it is. I'll overlay it on the podcast here, but
Oh, but later on, there's a harmony thing going on. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it's great. It's great. You know, anyways.
That was like the Orbit version there, almost.
Kind of.
Very rocking.
Yeah.
Oh, and, wow. And apparently, there's even a short URL now. tr.im/DrupalSong.
There we go.
There you go. TR.
Thank you.
But
so much.
But it's not the original Drupal song. It's the... Anyways, but... but yeah, and then I also I just want to repeat my bounty again. I mentioned this on Twitter, twitter.com/jjeff, that yes, I might
dirty,
beat James yet. Yeah, follow me, don't follow Waka. Yeah,
and if you want news on all that's going on in the latest with Drupal 7, you can follow Webchick.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Anyways, but the if you do Google for and don't hit the lucky thing for Drupal Song, you will inevitably get the Drupal Song music video on YouTube, which
just don't.
It scares me. It scares
it's
me so much.
Terrifying. It will traumatize you for the rest
of your life. Creepy.
Oh no.
It's so
now people will have to go watch it.
Oh, it's creepy. And anyway, so I just want to say I will give $20 to anyone who can post a new video for that on YouTube, particularly if it can become more popular than that other one so that it shows up in the Google search results rather than this scary, scary little alien head. I mean, we refer to the scary little alien head, but that is a particularly scary alien head.
So, you know, by virtue of talking about this, it's going to skyrocket in popularity.
I know.
You're shooting yourself in the foot, man.
Seriously. Seriously, trouble. Anyways, so we're getting long into the podcast, and what we should probably do is sort of split this part off into another podcast on its own. We made an announcement. We've been working on a project that had been called Project Codename. That was the code name for the project. Well, we didn't have a name. And we came up with a name. It's called Buzzer, B-U-Z-Z-R. You can find out a little bit more information and the link back to the Lullabot site at buzzr.com. And we made a video sort of showing kind of what we'd been working on. And it was very, very popular. When did that go up? Lullabot buzzer. I want to say it went up about 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, something like that. And anyways, a video just sort of showing kind of what we've been working on. Buzzer is a usability layer on top of Drupal, sort of wrapping around Drupal in the same way that Ubuntu wraps around Linux or even OS X wraps around BSD Unix. Buzzer sort of wraps around Drupal, and we started working on it a while back. And we'd been watching the work that Mark and Lisa had been doing, Mark Bolton and Lisa, how do you pronounce your last name? Reichelt, is that right?
Reichert, I think.
Okay.
I didn't know that, eh?
And we've been watching the work that they'd been doing because we had done this stuff in that sort of mode that you do with startups where you sort of work quietly and try and put together enough stuff that you can go and wow investors. You can go and impress them with, oh, my goodness, rather than sort of having it out there in public. So it's a little bit of a different model for us at Lullabot where we are used to working in public. And when Acquia hired Mark and Lisa to do a bunch of usability stuff, we watched what they were doing and found that a lot of their ideas were lining up with a lot of our ideas. And we'd been feeling a little bit bad about kind of working quietly anyways. And we decided, you know what, let's just get involved in this discussion and show what we've done. And so we put this video up on lullabot.com, and it was really very popular. But of course our work isn't really finished. I mean, that was the thing. It's all very, I don't know, how would you describe it? It's, we're sort of working towards an alpha, or we're working towards a prototype. And a lot of these concepts in Drupal, there are no good systems for. There's no good systems for icons in Drupal. There's no good systems for the way that we were working with blocks, where you had these drag and drop blocks, and you could have different blocks in different places on different pages and stuff like that. And so the layer of stuff gets to be so sort of thick and sort of tightly integrated that it was difficult to kind of extract any of the individual pieces of it. I mean, so Drupal Drupal is a very loosely coupled system, and we were trying to create a very tightly integrated interface. And so releasing any individual part of it individually, and we did, there were a few things that went out there. There's the CSS API that I put out, and Jeff Eaton put out simple views, and a whole bunch of stuff. If you kind of look at the Lullabot new projects in Drupal over the past year, there's a whole bunch of stuff that ultimately sort of went into Buzzer, and we tried to break things out where we could. But particularly with the interface stuff, it's still kind of all tightly together. And so we're trying to figure out how to get that out there. And meanwhile, there's also the work that's happening with Mark and Lisa and in the community on Drupal 7. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess that there's a discussion that should happen about Drupal 7 usability and what realistically is going to get in and what's not. I think I keep seeing people on Twitter posting things like, oh, I'm going to wait for Drupal 7 because it looks like the usability will be a whole lot better. And for those of us who've been in Drupal for a while, we know there's usually a big difference between what people are talking about ought to be in Drupal and what actually goes in. I don't know. Any of you guys want to sort of chime in on that? Like,
I would say there are two really, really big challenges in Drupal usability. One is figuring out how things actually should work, and the other one is making them work that way. Neither of those are trivial tasks. And I think what we're seeing right now is a really big collaborative discussion trying to iron out the details of how should Drupal's user interface conventions work. What tools can we put in the hands of people to smooth out difficult concepts, difficult ways of approaching the process of making Drupal sites and stuff like that. And that's the kind of stuff that is, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, well, you just think up ideas and you try them. But, like, there's a lot of time and work that goes into that. And then the second phase is, like, actually implementing those things. Some of those things can happen at the same time, but it's, like, they're big. And it's tricky because especially when you're trying to work with, a large system like Drupal, a lot of those great ideas may be relatively straightforward at the conception stage, but there's all kinds of little tangly bits threaded throughout Drupal that have to be, sort of finessed into place to work with a new way of approaching things. That's a lot of the stuff that we were encountering with Codename, now Buzzer. And I mean, we were, working through a lot of those things, but it's sort of the slow but steady process of patching small issues in Drupal, adding a hook here, getting things in place there, so that these kinds of things can be layered on top of the underlying APIs. And I mean, it's really worthwhile work, but it's also, the kind of thing that happens in phases too.
Yeah, it's like a lot of we refer to glue code modules a lot of times, right? The modules that you build for a website that are just kind of there to accomplish what the client needs, accomplish the user interface things that your designers aren't happy with the way that Drupal works, and basically Buzzer is glue code. And the glue code stuff is usually the stuff that's like, if you turn off any of the modules, there's so many dependencies or it's just not loosely coupled. And I don't know. I mean, the code's out there and we definitely want to participate in these discussions. But I also just don't know. I mean, so Acquia, I know, is doing a bunch of work. They've kind of taken on the some of the implementation tasks around the Drupal 7 usability stuff. I mean, I to some extent, there's a discussion that I'll just sort of toss this concept out there and we can discuss. But I would say that I don't know if I'm even going to agree with this, but the financial economic models around Drupal don't support good user interface. I mean, to some extent,
could you explain?
Well, to some extent that's so, most people in the Drupal community make money building, Drupal, Drupal sites for their clients, and implementing the user interface as they need to for their clients. I mean, Drupal is very flexible, and they can put it that way. But the process of making the Drupal installation better, we saw that was a thing that happened very later in the Drupal development process, and easier to configure and easier to set up and easier to rearrange your website and stuff like that. There aren't a whole lot of economic models around improving those things in Drupal, except for in Acquia's case, the case of just making Drupal better because they are wanting to be sort of the Drupal company. We have some of that. I mean, but for most like Drupal development companies, I don't know if they're. I'm not saying that they don't want it. I don't mean to imply that they, you know, are necessarily. I mean, certainly there's an argument to be made for, you know, ruining people's job security and that kind of thing. But you know, it's like, oh, if Drupal's easy.
Where I come into though is like this. It's like, yeah, you know, like. There's a non-trivial amount of time that goes into every Drupal project to just make it work for your clients. You know what I mean? Like, and explain the interfaces and explain this and explain that, or else do dozens, if not hundreds of hours of theming work to make it look like something that a normal person could use. And I think that regardless of job security and stuff like that, I think there's a very strong economic indicator that if you were spending less time doing that on every single project, you could take more projects on. Do you know what I mean? So it would be wonderful if we saw a collection of companies all working to make Drupal 7 usability awesome, because we'd all benefit in the end, because we'd end up spending less time on training materials and less time on theming and less time on, you know, having to do wireframes to figure out how the heck are we going to do this and how are we going to block this off from them, and these huge hook form alters and these huge hook menu alters to hide the stuff we don't want our clients to see. I mean, what if we just fixed it? You know what I mean? And then we just, you know, like, then none of us would have to do this kind of like sort of, it's not monkey work, but I mean, it's tedious and it's annoying. It's specific for each client. And, you know, it'd just be really nice to be able to just use Drupal out of the box and then focus on the really interesting things, which is like, what is the special thing that this client needs that's going to set them apart from the competitors? Let's work on that code, and let's work on, you know, making more flexible APIs so that we can build even cooler sites. Let's not mess with the stuff like you should just be able to figure out how to post a piece of content without an instruction manual. You know what I mean? Like, that's just basic stuff. So I think that's true. I think that, you know, there's a definite market for people who want to, you know, like the people who do this kind of like UI massaging for Drupal are definitely getting a lot of work. But I mean, it would be so neat if those people could be working on more interesting, difficult, you know, whatever problems than just making Drupal usable by someone who's not a developer.
But isn't making Drupal usable also a difficult challenge? I mean,
oh, sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
go ahead, Kent.
I was just going to say, part of the challenge of making Drupal usable is just the, you know, picking a use case, because Drupal's sort of a toolkit that can do, you know, it's supposed to do anything for everybody, which means that, you know, when you try to make it usable, that's an impossible task to sort of tailor that. So that's one of the things that we dealt with a lot with just interacting with Buzzer, was picking the different use cases and then starting to tailor the tools around that. So it's kind of, you know, it is for most websites, you know, Drupal can, on the user-facing side, provide any functionality that you need. But for the admin side, there's all different types of workflows depending on, you know, what your use case is.
Well, and then to abstract all that. So, I mean, our thing was just removing lots of stuff. And if the next version of Drupal comes out with a lot of stuff removed, if we just say, for instance, okay, moving forward, all comments on nodes are going to be forward chronological. That's just the way it is. You know, I think a lot of people would have problems with that. There are certain use cases where you want the most recent comment to be at the top.
Well, then
if you look, though, at the...
I was just going to say that quickly that just splitting the there can still be like a super admin user, like user one can still have like the full 747 options of everything, you know. but it's like there's it's sort of like creating other admin roles where you're kind of blocking out a lot of the cruft that they're never going to actually use.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the work that Mark and Lisa are doing at d7ux.org, what you'll see is they're focusing on the tools that are common mostly to content creators, not even worrying about the whole what's the Drupal site builder process like. They're working on the interfaces that are client facing. So like the person whose job it is to delete all the spam comments out of the queue, or the person whose job it is to post the announcement about upcoming, you know, field trip to, you know, the zoo, whatever. Those are the people that they're optimizing the user experience for. And those are the people that, yeah, I mean, Drupal can be used in a lot of different ways, but fundamentally, everybody's creating content. Everybody wants to be able to edit stuff in an easy way. Everybody wants to be able to find things, you know, like not have to look in 16 different places for how to, you know, configure a module and stuff like that. So there's some basic things that we can do that are just a net win for everybody. I agree that when you get into nitty gritty use cases, they vary widely, very widely. But I think if we focused on some of the larger things that every single Drupal site, even if it's nothing more than an Amazon Web Service parser versus a huge social networking wingy dingy, you know, website, all of those sites have in common, they're going to need to deal with specific parts of the administrative interface and specific parts of you know, content creation and user registration and stuff like this. We can make all of that streamlined. But it's still leaving the flexibility for people who want, you know, a hierarchical menu that doesn't swoosh around and they want to click every single link individually because that's how they, you know, charge by the hour for what they do or whatever. That's fine. But we should tailor the default, you know, experience so that, you know, it's just not as hard for people. And I think that there's a lot that we can do, a lot of obvious problems we can fix, and a lot of, you know, really big stake in the grounds we can say this is going to be the default way this works and still retain that flexibility. But it is going to be a lot of work, and we do need all the help we can get.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a lot of concepts that are, you know, like when you start thinking about icon handling in Drupal. I mean, it would be nice if there was an icon library in Drupal. It would be nice if there were some functions and conventions around using icons. A jQuery JavaScript plugin management system. There's none of those in Drupal either. And I mean, certainly we've found for a lot of this, you know, if you want to get Ajax-y, you need a lot of JavaScript. And there's no central place to put that in Drupal and those kind of things. So there's just a lot of pieces that need to be worked out. And while we can sort of shortcut them quickly for Buzzer, when we really start talking about getting them into Drupal 7, you know, we're happy to join the discussion. But I wish that we had something where we could just sort of drop it in place and say, here, we've solved all the problems. But that really wasn't our goal exactly to solve all the problems for everyone. Yeah. So
I will say though, like if anyone out there is interested in solving these problems and wishes that we did have an icon library manager for Drupal and wishes we did have a JavaScript plugin repository manager, we are in CodeThaw until September 1st. So now is the time. If you want to fix Drupal at a fundamental level so that you have to quit working around its limitations, this is the time to help out. And so, you know, go to d7ux.org, find me on IRC, whatever you want to do. I'm very interested in talking to anybody who wants to drive this stuff forward because we've got about 3 months left and a lot of work to do. And it would be wonderful if we could all sort of band together and, you know, and make it so that, you know, the default Drupal install, we didn't have to be embarrassed to show our clients. Stuff like that. So, yeah. Just saying.
And I definitely do. I've been trying to schedule an interview with Mark and or Lisa to talk about the stuff they've been working on in more depth. I always feel bad talking about stuff without people being here because you know, our interpretation of what they're doing may be different than their experience. So not that we're saying anything bad about them. I think they're doing really great work, but yeah. And then in another podcast,
Mark Bolton, he likes Comic Sans, so you know.
Please don't say such horrible things. and then I do want to do another podcast to talk about a lot of the things that we did tackle with Buzzer and how what we came up against and sort of how we decided to try and tackle those kinds of things. So that'll also be a future podcast. But we've gone on for a little over an hour here, and let's do the pick of the week, module pick of the week, and then we'll wrap it up, and we've got a whole list of things for future podcasts, so we have no excuses to do another podcast sooner rather than later.
So the module pick of the week is one that I can be found ranting about whenever I'm on IRC or, you know, at dinner with friends or whatever. It's Vue's bulk operations. Essentially, it lets you take any Vue that's displayed in a table style and turn it into a grid with like checkboxes where you can select each item, and a drop down that lets you choose different actions that you can perform on all of the items that you've checked. What that means is that it's a really, really super easy way to roll your own back-end administrative tools, like putting together a screen that lets admins view all of the unpublished content on the site, review it, and then fire off actions that publish it, put it on a front page, and email the authors. It integrates with the actions that come with Drupal 6. There's a lot of cool tools that connect it to, allowing it to edit CK fields. It's really, really polished. The maintainer is really continuing to develop it and add new functionality, and I think it's just absolutely stellar, and it's the way of the future. If you build sites for clients or you work with like large amounts of content on a Drupal site, you definitely want to check it out.
Yeah. So I think that using Vue's for back-end stuff is something that people don't think about a whole lot. I always think of Vue's as sort of front end things and blocks for users and stuff. But that when you start getting into permissioned Vue's and putting them in the admin section, it gets really interesting. Karen Stevenson just did a thing, right? She just did a thing.
Yeah, she just released a module called Comment Moderation or Comment Moderator, Comment Manager. It's drupal.org/project/comment_manager. It's basically just a tool for managing the comments on your site. If you have something like Vote Up Down module installed, it will also show like what the votes on the comments are while you go in and moderate them. And it's all just wired together using Vue's bulk operations, token module, Vue's, stuff like that. It's one of those glue code modules that you were talking about earlier. And it just sort of does the heavy lifting of configuring a really useful tool out of those existing pieces. And I'm jazzed.
Yeah. One of our clients has been doing a lot of work around their comments and stuff. And so she's become a comment expert. in the process, and so she just put out this module just today that we're recording the podcast, and kind of a sort of good example of that stuff, Vue's and Vue's bulk operations. We forgot to mention that. So for our we have Vue's and CCK videos, and we put free chapter videos up this week as well. You can find those on lullabot.com in the articles section. Says something like free videos. but yeah, if you're thinking about buying the learning CCK and or learning Vue's videos, there's free chapters up, and you can kind of get a taste of what those are all about. There you go. Let's call that a podcast.
Woo!
Hooray! We're back on the horse.
Yay!
Hooray!
Woo!
All right. Yay. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next time on the Drupal podcast. Bye.
So long.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.